Good morning and welcome to another episode of Smashy Business Daily. I'm Libna Hamdan.
And I'm Richard Fitzgerald.
Who is drinking coffee for the first time?
Yeah.
Ever.
I gave up coffee in 2021. We talked about this before. And now, like, I'm getting such little sleep and I just need an espresso, you know?
I need to talk about this, but first I'm going to go quickly through the headlines. Helitaxi accident happened and a Dubai passenger is claiming that she was in their taxi and it left her paralyzed. It's been raising questions about liability when it comes to ride-hailing and e-hailing companies. Next, we have the Emirates CMO hinted that the airline chose the NBA for a partnership over football because the investment was, quote-unquote, a reasonable number. And then Big Macs are expensive and people are not happy. They're buying them much less.
Interesting. Good stories today. Yeah, I'm drinking coffee, Lubna. But first and more importantly, happy birthday.
Thank you.
It's your birthday today.
Oh, thanks so much. So, I appreciate that.
So we should have cake with the coffee at breakfast.
That's
true.
But
I think we'll have to have cake later. We will have it later, but it's a little bit early for cake. Or is it ever too early for cake?
It's never too early for cake. It makes me feel like Marie Antoinette, I think, having cake for breakfast, right?
Yeah.
The famous let them eat cake line.
Oh, right. Was that her? I thought that was Queen Victoria.
Yeah.
No, this is Marie Antoinette.
No, it's
French.
Marie Antoinette. Okay. It's not often that I get to correct you. So that was a nice
yeah.
little moment.
Good. You got it. You got it. I'm sure plenty of times.
I'm looking forward to seeing how you are after the coffee. Because this is the first time you've had coffee in how many years?
No, I've traveled to the US, I traveled to Saudi, and I'm still training, and I'm going to a few more events because it's quite active, right? And like, I'm just suckered back into quick espressos just to keep me going.
Yeah.
But it's nice having the coffee. I would like it not to be like the regular thing, but it's okay. I'm not going to overthink it.
Okay. You can tell me about that a week
cool.
after.
And back to you. So your birthday and my coffee are not as equal importance. So
that's true.
What are you celebrating tonight? Are you doing anything?
I'm just celebrating with my family. We celebrate, you know, traditionally at home every day. But you know another thing that's interesting is we have some students here.
Oh, yeah.
Gen Zers.
Alpha. There's a new one.
Alpha.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, my God. There's always a new name for these generations. But they just gave a presentation about how they would do a media company. They created a media company. And they're just amazing. They're here to eat our lunches, aren't they?
They really are. Like, it's Augustus Media Academy, right? And it's been mm-hmm. running for a week. It's the first week we did it. And from different schools within the GEMS network or group, they came in and, yeah, they've been so positive all week and they just did their presentation, they got the certificates.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, they're 14, 15, 16, 17 years old or younger, and all 20 or 30 of our team clapped and were really impressed with what they presented.
I think the quality that they all have in common is they're all fearless, I noticed. They just don't give a... Yeah.
Give a crap, yeah. They don't
give
care.
A crap.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know if we were allowed to use that word, but I guess we are. Right, so let's talk about the story that everyone is talking about. Helitaxi. Everyone is saying it's Kareem, it's the RTA, but it's actually Helitaxi. We had a disagreement about that yesterday. So a Dubai passenger, a Dubai resident, is claiming that an accident that happened in a helitaxi, which is a JV between Kareem and the RTA, but it is its own company, it's left her paralyzed. And it's been raising questions about company liability when it comes to ride-hailing companies and e-hailing companies like helitaxi. What do you think? I'll tell you first from the legal perspective, because we did ask legal experts, right? Mind you, we don't know the details of the police report. We don't know who the liable party is. We just know that she has been claiming that it took place in a helitaxi cab. None of the companies have commented back. We have reached out for requests for comments. They have not commented back. She used to be an Emirates cabin crew. We know that she now works for Emirates. Emirates don't want to talk about that. Why, I don't know, because as you mentioned, it's actually a great story that they've given her a job, even though despite her disability. Now, legally, when it comes to liability, a legal expert told us that from a traffic law perspective, the car driver is responsible. But if, from a contractual perspective, Karim, the RTA, and Hala Taxi are responsible because the contract is with them. They cannot waive their liability. Another expert said she easily could have gotten 1 million dirhams in damages. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, well, first of all, like, the lady published about this, happened a year ago or so, and she's published this in the last week or so, and it's blown up on social media.
Yeah.
And
Kitty on the Wheels is her handle, if you want to check it out on Instagram.
Yeah, Daria, first name. And, you know, she's done it in a way where, you know, Karim are mentioned, right? And I think sometimes people jump on this, and sometimes people sort of think it's a Dubai issue or a problem, right? Mm-hmm. First of all, it's tragic what happened, right? Like, it's, you know, young people from around the world come to this city to fulfill their hopes and dreams. And there's some, you know, clearly she's a fun-loving person from what she posted, and she's an enthusiastic person. And even how she's bounced back already and to be back in the workplace, like, it's really commendable. And, you know, I hope that she can overcome the difficulties as much as possible. Mm-hmm. But it's really tragic what's happened, and accidents, you know, unfortunately on the roads, it's not something all the technology in the world has fixed yet, right?
Yeah.
People die regularly, and tragic happen regularly. So it's really tragic, and I think at the bigger picture is, let's try and fix that problem with self-driving, or I don't know, let's try and less people to have accidents. And then, you know, sometimes when this stuff comes up, Luna, so leaving that specific story aside for a second, whenever I hear about like stories like this with Karim or captains or gig economy and things like that, and where the libel accounts, people are seem to say that, oh, it's because people aren't treated well in Dubai. And I'm kind of like, hang on. If you look at the regulation in Silicon Valley and look at all the court cases in California over the years, it's a huge global legal issue. The gig workers, where is the responsibility? If you're not a full-time employee, if you're not employed by Uber or whoever, or DoorDash, then where's the responsibility, right?
Exactly.
And the Ubers don't want the responsibility. They want the contract workers, because if you're a full-time employee, there's more liability on the company.
Absolutely.
And this is a global gig economy. It's a technology issue, and the lawyers allude to that. Mm. So it's not a Dubai lunchbox problem. It's a global problem. And I think, you know, there's no definite answer to it. Each place will have its own regulation on that.
Yeah, I just think that, and I know we disagreed about this yesterday, but you didn't want to mention Karim in the headline. I wanted to, and I wanted to mention the RTA as well. But if we just mention Hala Taxi, which is not as big as Karim, are people going to pay much attention to the story? Is it gonna, you know, hold these larger companies accountable? Because, okay, in this case, it is Hala Taxi. Hala Taxi is provided, you know, you can book a Hala Taxi on the Karim app.
Or the RTA, or the, yeah.
Yeah, right, correct. But Karim have also had faced backlash for example, I think they had a campaign earlier that you get a refund if you don't get your food within X amount of minutes. What does that mean for the riders?
I just pick up on something there, because we don't need to hold someone to account. We don't need to hold companies to account. Like, the fact of the matter is that the CEO of Hala came on Smashy before. They are a separate entity, just like Salik went public on the stock market. Mm. If Hala is super successful, they're in talks with another Emirate to launch. They're in talks with other parts of the region. Hala could become an IPO, right? Mm-hmm. It's got 30 employees. It's got a CEO. It's got a separate office. JVs, incorporated JVs is different to unincorporated JV. An incorporated JV is another company.
Sure.
They've found a gap in the market, and maybe it could be rolled out globally. So it is a Hala situation. The user doesn't know, because the interface. But it's like saying, it's like not blaming, not talking about a B2B software. So it is a Hala situation. But, you know, the bigger picture there is the gig workers and and the legal liability around that. I just want to mention one other thing. I remember a couple of years ago, Casey and Love in Dubai interviewed an American lady who'd never heard of Dubai. I don't think had a passport and never been out of America. And the reason she moved to Dubai, she was unemployed. She came on the Love Dubai show and she got offered a job after, which we felt really proud about. But and it'd be good to check in on her. But the reason she came to Dubai is that her brother was a DoorDash delivery guy, and he got shot dead on the doorstep delivering food at night in a rough neighborhood.
Wow.
Right? So wow. This is the point I'm trying to make. Like, there are problems with innovation. Like, you know, we talk about Facebook and accountability and you know, the Senate and all that sort of stuff, right? You can disrupt, but you can also, you know, which is why regulation, and which is why building a city of the future like is happening here and all the tech that's happening here, all these things are important things from a regulatory framework point of view.
Yeah, absolutely.
But your question was, I kind of digress.
My question was that, you know, even though this is a helitaxi problem, considering that Karim is also in the ride-hailing, you know, space, and with their drivers, they do really push them to the limit when it comes to delivery times, and they have faced backlash for that. So I'm just thinking, like, these companies do generally, aside from the story, they do need to take some accountability, right?
Yeah, look, fair enough. I mean, those companies have their things to worry about. I think we're trying to tell the story about shed light and information that doesn't exist and tell the story of that. And then we know that there are other stakeholders. There's the regulators. There's the companies. I think, you know, over the years on our other media brands, we've covered a lot of the gig economy workers or the captains and the drivers and everyone who works on these apps, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the way that it's done is just showing how they evolve and how things change. And I think that's all that we can do. You know, there's competitors to those companies who do think that they don't treat them well. Yeah. There's people in those companies who do think they do treat them well. You know, there's people who think that lawyers are overworked, bankers are abused, people in the creative industry are abused, people in the coffee and the barista industry are abused. There's other people who are more growth mindset and think that they're happy to have a job. And, you know, so it goes back to this whole thing, right? Like,
true.
It's almost ideology about where you stand. But, you know, I think, again, I'll always say this, I think technology is a net good, and I think the Karim have done wonders for the region. Shouldn't have sold to Uber. They've even the super app stuff. Like, I remember when
that Fetcher, was a mistake, wasn't it?
Probably,
I do think so.
It's an evolution, but probably. I mean, most people say that Souq and Karim, but $3 billion is a lot of money. Like, you know, but I think the interesting thing about Karim is that they did so well with diversifying their portfolio. Like, they owned the Box thing, and that shouldn't have been theirs, because Fetcher had a march on them, you know?
But that, I mean, gosh, Karim Box is amazing.
So good.
It's just that, you know, the app really needs some financial backup, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's not that good. Anyways, yesterday, you did something very journalistic.
Okay.
and I was very proud as a journalist. So you went to the Emirates press conference,
which was wonderful, but
which was amazing. So they just partnered with the NBA.
Yeah.
Tell us the question that you asked and tell us how you felt.
Yeah, so it was stunning, right? There was an Emirates HQ, and it was Brent Black was talking, and there was a star from the NBA and someone from the NBA organization and the head of marketing at a very longer title, and I don't do him justice, but Bucherec's a legend in the industry. And so it was very pomp, it was very sort of brilliant Emirates, brilliant videos, NBA brands, Emirates brands, like two really global brands, really amazing. And they announced this global partnership, and I asked the question, and I said, will we see NBA on ice, but also what's the total investment? And then followed up with, like, will we see more NBA basketball leagues in the UAE and all that? And they sort of ignored the question about the investment. And then later someone asked a follow-on question of, why, if you're sponsoring something in the US in sports, why did you pick NBA? Mm-hmm. And the full answer was that they were looking at this for a long time. But then also that it, coming back to me, he looked and he said it was a reasonable price, it was a reasonable amount. And our brilliant journalist here, Lubna, has kind of said that, you know, Emirates did it because they got it for cheap. But I think what's interesting, so that wouldn't have been my interpretation, but it was just, look.
But like, you asked the question, that was amazing. And you felt weird because everyone went silent.
I felt like I said the wrong thing at Emirates HQ, yeah.
And that's how you know you asked the right question.
But look, like, I think sponsorship, like, it's not, global marketing sponsorship aren't secrets, right? If you invest in the Olympics, it's a $50 million or two, like, people know the ticket for a sponsorship, right? And NBA are one of the most commercial savvy sports leagues, probably. Exactly. The most commercial.
Yeah.
But what's happening in the US at the moment is the NFL is dominating. Super Bowl Sunday coming up, most views per platform. I think the statistics of like TV in the US last year, nothing comes close to NFL. Mm-hmm. I think like wrong numbers, but 93 of the 100 most topped linear watched shows last year in the US were NFL.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
NBA doesn't come close to football in the US.
Right.
So I think that could have been, that is interesting to look at it like that.
Yeah.
But then, you know, he gave a really nice story. He said he went to Australia and someone said, who should you sponsor? And they said, well, tennis, well, they do that. They do the US Open, they do Australia Open.
Yeah.
They sponsor AC Milan, they sponsor Benfica, they sponsor Arsenal is the Emirates Stadium. Like, you know, when we were invited to an Emirates sponsorship thing, it was kind of like, well, they do things big.
Yeah.
So what's it going to be? And was it going to be, you know, there's a lot of talk in the US right now, we're probably running over it, but they've just announced the stadiums for the 2026 World Cup.
Yeah.
And all the stadiums like the MetLife and everything like that, right? So Emirates, like, what are they going to sponsor?
Yeah.
Do they sponsor a team, a stadium? And they've gone for the whole league.
That's
which
kind of
is
interesting. Yeah.
I think it's brilliant. And I'm happy for you to go with this angle, and that's cool. But I just think, like, I was sitting there like and probably brainwashed, but like I was just so proud. I'm so proud that like because I know how hard it is to do business with NBA and to invest in a commercial thing. Like if Emirates, you know, people want to catch Emirates and then they've just flown away again. Lovely pun, but like they've just kind of went to America's prime asset and sports in America is so commercial and so huge. So kudos to Emirates.
Kudos
and
to them.
Yeah.
you can't, you know what? People love to hate on companies that succeed here in the region, you know, especially publications like The Guardian. They always have something bad to say. So, no, you can't help but feel proud, right? I'm going to say one last story and then we're gonna introduce our guests. We have an interview. We have a really interesting guest after this. But I remember when Mike Tyson came over to Dubai a couple of years back and there was a press conference and just going back to your story about I felt like I said the wrong thing. Mike Tyson at the time, I was supposed to interview him and his PR person told me by mistake that he's refusing interviews with female reporters and he was coming to Dubai at the time to open some kind of gym that obviously never opened, which happens a lot with athletes. They come here, they make these huge announcements, the deal doesn't follow through. But I remember I asked the question, I said, why are you refusing interviews with female reporters? And Chris Fade was the MC at the time, and he just kind of snatched the mic from my hand, and we had a little row about it. But yeah, everyone went silent, and you know, I left as soon as the press conference ended. But it was, yeah, Chris and I are friends now, it's fine. But welcome to the world of journalism and how journalists feel like the outsiders all
the
time.
Yeah. No, I think you're the pro here. I'm doing my best to help. But yeah.
No, it was great of you to ask that question. Anyways, next up we've got Alex Mubert. He's the co-founder of Creative Studio Delivered, multimedia that work for results. But what does that mean? We're about to find out. Welcome back, guys. We've got Alex in the studio.
Hello.
Welcome, Alex. So you're the co-founder of Delivered.
Yeah.
It's a multimedia that works for results.
Yes,
it's a creative studio.
Yes.
What exactly does that mean?
So I will start with some background on myself. I have two educations. One is very, very technical.
Mm-hmm.
And one is very creative. It's the jazz music. I used to play on the double bass, jazz music, yeah.
There's a song, I don't know if you've watched This Is Us, but there's a song called We Can Always Come Back to This.
Yeah.
Do you know it?
Yes.
It's one of my favorite songs.
Yeah,
okay, go ahead.
So this is like where the technology meets the creative. So that's like in my mind, you know? And I was working in creative industry for like 15 years, and mostly my work was behind some very cool creative projects where you need to apply a lot of innovations into the marketing.
Yeah.
So multimedia is the combination of like media. So the sound, the content, the lights, the temperature, so everything.
Yeah.
So it's like omnisensory thing around us. And mostly this industry is not called multimedia industry, but I think it's like one of the future titles for that.
Yeah.
So with the creative innovations, it's like the applying of the creative technologies to mm-hmm. the ceremonies, to the shows, to the real estate development, I mean the surrounding around us, yeah. to the content and so on.
Yeah. So tell us about some of the projects that you would do, for example, just so people can understand the services a bit better.
Yeah, for example, one of the last projects we held in Dubai Future Foundation, it's the partner company of the Museum of the Future here in Dubai.
Yeah.
And it was the project where we applied a lot of innovations. So it was the AI music, which was generating in real time, and the young Emirati boy, his name is Rashid Al Marzuki.
Wow.
He was playing piano.
Wow.
Like national music of Emirates music.
Wow.
Like the heritage, and AI was like learning from this music in real time. And around that there was a lot of graphics, and it was like it was not the pre-made show, it was the real time. So every time he played something, AI starts to learn from him in real time, just from scratch.
And
the graphics around were developing the graphics, which are also generative. So everything is like real time.
So what was AI doing exactly? Creating music with him as well, or was it the graphics?
No, the music as well.
The music
as
well.
Yes, the graphics were like algorithmic. So
okay.
The graphics were listening to the music from him and from AI.
Wow.
And, creating all these effects around. And AI was learning and training in real time based on what he's playing. So
yeah.
You can play jazz music, it will try to play jazz with you. So the middle parts, like the melodies around and so on.
Yeah. Do artists like that? Because I'm thinking a lot of people would think, oh, you know, is Rashid going to have a job in the future,
yeah.
You know? What would you say to that?
Well, 7 years ago, I launched the company, and I was the first in the world who developed AI music application. 7 years ago, nobody was talking about AI at that moment.
Wow,
it was very, very, unique and niche thing.
Yeah.
And by this moment, we have 10,000 musicians on the platform.
Wow.
And they like apply a lot of their content to our mm-hmm. platform, and we pay for this content.
Uh-huh.
And the end users, they will get the like real cool content because their music is generated like according to the content that was applied by very famous and cool musicians from Berlin, from US, and so on. So you need,
nice.
You know, musicians should be the part of this movement, and they
yeah.
should be compensated for that, and the whole industry should work mm-hmm. like on the both sides, mm-hmm. musicians and the AI technologies.
I like your take on that, because it's kind of like when the internet came along,
yeah.
and social media, let's say that the internet is way back now, but when social media came along, you can either embrace it as a journalist, which is what we're doing here at Smashy and at Lovin, and Augustus Media is providing news through social media,
yeah.
right? It was hard for me to accept that when I first joined, because I am a print journalist and online journalist second. But okay, I like that. So musicians should work together with AI. They shouldn't be afraid of AI. They should
it's
use
the
it
tool.
As a tool.
It's the
yeah.
tool, but today, like every tool is used by like good people and bad people.
Mm.
Same as like nuclear, for example, technology. It
mm-hmm.
could be used like in both ways.
Yeah.
So at the moment, some companies, like the big companies, I don't want to say the names, but they use the content, which is...
You'll tell me their names later.
Yeah.
After the show.
Yes. Yeah, so this content is copyright protected. Even the journalist content, for example, it's copyright protected usually.
Right.
But they
right.
just used it to apply to the AI, and then AI can generate all these similar texts based on this content, and
yeah.
this the original copyright owners, they were not compensated for that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the big question at the moment in this industry, how it will work. And I'm on the side of the musicians, because I'm the creative guy myself.
Mm-hmm.
I used to do a lot of creative business, And I'm the jazz musician. Yeah,
nice.
I was the jazz musician, and yeah, I was playing on the same stage with Massive Attack, with, you know, the big bands. But yeah, for me, it's like something where something important that we should solve. Mm-hmm. And in on my side, we are always on the side of the musicians, because you can have a lot of, you know, end clients, but if you have no creators, the content will be bad and they will not buy it.
Yeah.
But if you have a lot of cool musicians and they like love your product and they love your approach,
yeah,
you will always sell their content to the end users.
True. Tell me a little bit about the business model. So is it subscription based? How do you make money?
So for Delivered, for Delivered, we are like the agency at the moment. But at the same time, we're building the new business like based on the immersive spaces.
Okay.
So it's like the space where you can, you know, look for the cool content, for the shows. It's like the content is generating around you. It's like the mapping rooms, the rooms with the screens, with the mirrors and so on. So it's like immersive experience rooms. And this will be the business based on the franchise. Mm-hmm. And the second part is the agency business.
So you will create the content, but you won't provide the spaces, or will you provide both the spaces and the content?
We provide the technology, technical supervision, and the content.
For events and companies and...
Yeah, at the moment for events, but we see the big business model by building these immersive spaces in the malls, in the cinema theaters.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. Okay, interesting. I have a question for you, because there was that kind of experience with Van Gogh, Gogh's art. Sorry, not him himself. I wish he was still alive. What a legend! But it was there in the Dubai Mall, and they shut it down. We don't know the reason. We don't know if there were enough people that were interested.
Yeah.
Do you think people would be interested? How is the demand for that?
You know, it's the demand for technology is based on the content. Van Gogh is like, it's okay, but imagine...
It's okay.
I mean, he's very, you know, famous artist and so on, but, you know, mostly the people are demanding Spider-Man, not Van Gogh.
Right.
Just imagine this room, which is filled by Spider-Man, and you can go on, so there will be a lot of people there.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why we should focus. I mean, I think that 25% should be for the digital artists, for the famous artists, like for the art content, artistic content, very creative content. Mm. And 75% of this time should be spent on the popular things, on the popular franchises, like IPs, and something, you know, about the space, about the nature, about the famous, fantasy worlds, and so on.
Yeah.
Which is more, you know,
maybe anime
for people.
Or something like that as well.
Anime is amazing.
Yeah.
And we are dreaming to build one room which is like anime based.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Very cool. What are your expectations for the business?
You mean?
Like, what are your expectations in terms of, you know, what are your goals for this year?
For this year we have some revenue-based goals, and we want to launch the first this immersive space. And the first one will be launched on Bali, in this, you know, amazing island in Indonesia.
In Bali, not in Dubai.
Not in Dubai.
But you
this
are based
year.
In Dubai.
We are based in Dubai and in Indonesia, so we have like two locations at the moment.
Nice. I'm really jealous that you're based in Bali.
Yeah.
How nice. One of my friends lives there, and I just live my life vicariously through her. Okay, so you're opening the first studio this year.
It will be the outdoor immersive jungle. So it's like 5,000 square meters. It's like the road through the jungle, and it will be filled by a lot of immersive things, the soundscapes, the multimedia installations, the lighting installations. So you will immerse yourself through this jungle, and it will be the first our own case for this business model.
How does that happen? Do you have to lease the land, and how are you going to make money from that? By it, like ticket prices from people, or will it be only for events that companies can book? Will it be both?
Yeah, that's, you know, the very cool story, because the location will be based in the city which is called Nuano. Mm-hmm. And this city is the private city. So, you know, today, like, everything happens, and there are a lot of, you know, these utopia things. And one of the our investor actually in the company, he's building the city in Indonesia. the city for creators. It's called Noana. So it's the city for, you know, the creative people. There will be, in the future, there will be the university for creative, you know, studies, like the digital fashion, digital architecture, and so on.
Nice.
And at the moment, they have several objects there already built. And we build like three, at the moment we're building three of them, two media sculptures. It's nice. The huge landmarks with a lot of technologies around. Very and cool. one, this EcoPath, it's called EcoPath, it's the multimedia park. So Very we nice. Are happy to work with him on these amazing projects.
And so how, you know, will it be tickets? Will it be a private, you said it's a private space. It's a private city, sorry.
No, it's not private. It's it will have so they aim to have 5 million visitors per year.
Okay. And privately owned, you mean? Sorry.
Yeah, okay, privately owned. Yeah, and okay. 10,000 of residents.
Okay.
And it's like on their turn. So either they will make the tickets and they will get the money from them, or it will be free, okay. or it will be for the residents.
Right.
So
right.
it depends on the business model. They're always trying to find the good business model, which is like suitable for these creative minds.
Right, sure. Okay, what about in Dubai? Are you in talks with anyone to do something like that? Are you thinking of?
Yeah, of course. We have some good conversations and negotiations. We also work a lot with Saudi. So for the
because I'm thinking NEOM would be the perfect place for that.
But our part is mostly on the when. Like right before the construction, right after the design stage. So we should be on the design stage to start the construction.
Sure.
And NEOM, for example, is not like, it's way from construction. It's like the concepts at the moment.
Right.
But yeah, we would love to work with
maybe.
Them. Yeah, we would love to work with them to apply these, you know, crazy things. Because my dream is to apply multimedia not only as the entertainment solution, but also as the well-being solution, where the you know the lights are adaptive, so the sounds are adaptive and they are like soothing, healing around you. So multimedia works to make yourself feel more calm, you know, more creative, to inspire you and so on.
Nice.
So that's why we think that multimedia will be applied to this, you know, amazing cities like NEOM.
Not like these lights, they're just killing us. But okay, that's really cool because we had a sleep expert on the show a couple of days ago.
Really?
And her name is Julie Malone. She's amazing. Shout out, Julie. And she was explaining how much light really affects your sleep.
Yeah.
So that's a really interesting angle, the well-being part of it. But we're running a bit short on time, but just one last question. You mentioned revenue before.
Yeah.
Any expectations for revenue? I mean, how much are you looking to make?
This year?
Yeah. This year,
The plan is $8 million.
$8 million this year. Okay, interesting. And the company is how old?
The company is 1 year old.
1 year
this
old.
This one. But the expertise is very high because my co-founder, she's in this industry maybe like 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the creative industry also like around 15 years.
Yeah.
So yeah.
yeah.
We started like not from scratch. We started from, you know, our own expertise and just launched the company and we got a lot of attention.
How much revenue? I'm going to push you a little bit, but if you're not comfortable, it's okay. How much did you make last year?
Yeah, 2 million.
2 million?
Yeah.
Okay.
Around 2 million, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, there's so much opportunity. It's an amazing concept, and I'm really excited to
Thank
see.
You so much.
And hopefully I'll go to Bali soon for vacation.
Yeah, you will visit these installations. You will be impressed. Yeah.
When is it launching?
The city will be launched within this year. The installations are already launched. It's one of them, so you can visit and look at that.
Nice.
So it's the installation which is made with the famous U.S. artist Daniel Popper.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the two huge faces with mapping around, so it's like amazing.
Very cool. I can already see all the fashion brands like running to that, and you know how they all just went to Saudi. I feel like this, having an immersive experience like that, would be really cool. Cool. Thanks so much, Alex.
Thanks
that
was for having me.
Really interesting.
Thank you so much.
Guys, subscribe to Smashy TV, our streaming service. Or if you prefer to listen to us on audio, get us wherever you get your podcasts, Anghami, Apple, Spotify, and follow us on all social media. And we'll see you tomorrow morning. Thank you.